Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. That's Ian in his nice Rockhart sweatshirt.
It's me.
I'm Pat in my pretty good Spy Hunter shirt. On the show today, we'll be talking about someone being sent to prison over a Pokemon card. That's a fun story. We're talking about an Amico business update that was sent out to everyone. And we'll also be talking about other fun things. First, if you want to listen to my DoorDash woes over the past weekend, you can listen to the exclusive Patreon that we do, exclusive podcast we do for the Patreon, patreon.com/CU podcast. Listen to that.
That's right.
That's what I did this weekend, is I got disappointed by DoorDash twice.
Yeah, you did. What did I do this weekend? I watched Escape from New York. I haven't seen that in a while.
Where?
Always a good time.
I haven't seen all the way through. I've seen parts.
Really? Oh, yeah. Jesus, man. Definitely got to watch that. You are deficit in your Carpenter watching.
You say that. Yeah, it took you years to see Big Trouble, Little China.
That's one movie.
But you're Mr. Carpenter, not
yes.
me.
I'm just saying, you are severely deficit in your Carpenter watching. That is impressive to me. Depressing. It's impressively depressing to me. So yeah, that's always a good time. Fun to watch that in, we watched it in like ultra HD. Wasn't quite 4K. It was like the 1920X something or another.
Off of what? It was digital version?
It was some sort of digital rip. Yeah.
You don't see the difference.
No, you do. It's pretty impressive.
Well, how big's your TV?
55 inches.
I mean, you wouldn't see the difference between that and the regular HD or super HD. I mean, 4K.
All I'm saying is it makes a movie like that look interesting because you see more than you probably should be
seeing. Oh, sure. You can see Kurt Russell's sweat glands.
I also went and played a little pinball by myself yesterday. Went to the Dino Bar, which is attached to Aero Club, and played the new.
Where the hell's that?
It's on India Street.
Oh, okay.
Played the new, because they've got like 10 machines there.
You never talk about this place. The Dino Club?
Dino Club. Yeah,
D-Y-N-O.
Dino Bar next to the Aero Club. No, they're not restaurants.
Dino Bar.
It's just one big bar that has
Dino
names.
Bar.
It used to be the Aero Club, which was a whiskey bar. Then they expanded on it into the adjacent building called the Dino Bar, which is where they put the pinball machines and the pool and stuff.
Does
like
it have
that.
Like a purple brontosaurus sort of a?
No. D-Y-N-O, not D-I-N-O. Oh, not Dino.
So there's 10 machines, though.
Not Dino Bar. Yeah, there's 10 machines. Anyways, the Godzilla machine. It's a fucking hoot and a holler.
Is it a new one?
Yeah.
Stern?
Newish. Stern. Very good. Loved it dearly.
It's very Stern.
Very Stern.
It's very formal and uptight.
Yes.
That's what Stern means.
So, yeah, that was my weekend. I'm going to shout out now. This is a weird intro. You're not talking about your weekend because you've only talked because you talked
about
it.
My whole weekend was DoorDash woes.
That was the whole weekend. Was waiting for food and being disappointed.
Yes.
My friends over at Necrosoft Games, along with content from 732 other creators, have put out a bundle for Ukrainian aid on itch.io. You can go there. We'll put the link here. It has raised, Jesus, the number keeps jumping every time I check it. They have raised $1,302,472.36 in, I'm not even sure this has been up for 24 hours at this point.
The first I heard about it. So you get 991 games.
It's various. So there's games, asset packs for developers, print and play RPGs. It's just loaded.
Everything.
It's loaded with stuff.
And a minimum of $10 is all they ask.
Minimum of $10.
So it's practically, I mean, it's like free. I mean,
it's insane.
What a great deal.
Yep.
And then it goes towards the International Medical Corps, provides medical assistance in the region.
They have very low fundraising overhead, 1% of income, with 89% of donations going to medical aid and 10% to administration. And then Voices of Children, a Ukrainian organization that helps children cope with the horrors of war, PTSD, readjusting to school, and getting back to being kids. They've been doing grassroots impromptu work during the war, such as setting up shelters, and they hope that'll be over soon. They can begin the work of healing these kids' hearts. I have a lot of faith in the people behind this bundle to have done excellent research on their where the money is going. And yeah, I made my donation last night. You know,
all right, I'll get on that. I'll get on that. Let me just say, the Ukrainian people, the courage, they're undergoing so much right now. They're fighting back this juggernaut, this bully juggernaut. And the Russians didn't think that they would have this much resistance. And it's really been nice to not nice that it's a war, but nice that everyone has come together. At least there's not been fucking both sidings,
right,
of this conflict. That's been nice to see that, except for like the propaganda, like some of the far rights that are funded by the Russians directly. Not to get into that, you know, things like that. But like, it's been nice to see a united front when it comes to this conflict. So that's been nice there. So yeah, check out that bundle. I'll get in on it after the podcast.
And honestly, I mean, you know, the games hardly matter at this point, but because of what you're supporting. Yeah. But they have come together and put together a really nice package. Yeah. Some of these games are really within like the past 6 months to a year too. Skatebird is new, usually costs like $20. CrossCode was highly lauded last year as a excellent top-down Zelda clone. That's on here.
Celeste's on here.
And Zero Ranger, which is a few years old, but Zero Ranger is easily the best top-down shooter I've played in probably 5 years, and it's got to be $15 on its own anyways, so
yeah,
throw in $10.
So they're all,
you can't hurt,
they're all just doing good and basically giving their games, they're giving games away for nothing.
Yep.
And all their assets, like I said, there's asset packs and other things on
there's so much cool stuff you can find in here. There's like little magazines with like mini D&D encounters you can have for like second level characters, like all sorts of ways to keep yourself occupied. This reminds me similarly of the Black Lives Matter bundle that raised a ton of money about 2 years ago, and you can entertain yourself forever in this. So don't want to dwell on it any longer.
All right, well, we also have to thank Evercade,
yep,
for sending us the VS, the home console.
And it is a gorgeous little system, too. Just one that, like, if you haven't seen one yet,
look how cute it is.
Yeah, they are tiny and cute.
There's a little cartridge slots. Let's see. Can you hold that up a little bit more?
Two cartridge slots if I can get it out.
Oh,
sorry.
don't break the console live, Ian.
I'm so bad at this. There we go.
Let me see this here. Nice and clean.
Yeah.
And there's the two cartridge slots at the front here. Little clicky power button you got going on here. You got the USBs. It's adorable. It's adorable. That's all. That's all. That's all the people ask for with actual physical media.
Actual physical media.
With a game software on the media and a manual. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be able to play it at home. It's easy to set up and use. And I mean, honestly, it's just like the handheld. I didn't think I was going to end up using the handheld a lot, but these little collections of games are a lot of fun to pop in and explore. And there's always something you haven't played on there.
I think it's fun that they put in the two slots. Because then it's like if it's the Atari pack or ones, it'll be one menu.
Load up both.
Yeah, that's just, they didn't have to do something like that. It's just a smart thing to do that. And also, Audi. Sent us I've known him for years, but he sent us the Wrestling with Pixels book.
I will not lie. I rolled up a fat one. And specifically to dive into that over the weekend.
So this is
it's so
chronological
good.
History of every wrestling game.
It's
up to, like, I think it's like fall 2020.
It's great. It has like everything in there. It's just so much fun to go through. I mean, all the way back to the Atari ones. I remember my buddy Lincoln actually gave me an Atari Tag Team Wrestling cartridge, and I don't have an
Atari.
That's
the first one. The first wrestling game is Tag Team Wrestling.
No, a different wrestling on the Atari. And first time I ever saw what it actually looked like was in this book, because I don't have an Atari to play it on.
But according to this, Tag Team Wrestling in the arcade was the first ever wrestling game in 83.
Good old menu selection.
And then the one I always forever saw in the store and always forgot what it was, Boppin' Wrestling on the PC. Boppin' Wrestle, excuse me. I used to see that in the store, and it haunted me for years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it literally haunted me for years. I'm like, what was that game with the big, almost gorgeous George-looking guy with the big curly hair and the red one? I used to see that at Egghead Software, it must have been, or I think it was with Egghead. It wasn't an Electronic Boutique. And I used to see it at the top shelf. I'm like, that looks really cool. And I love wrestling. And back in, what was this, 85, there was almost no wrestling game. So it's like, oh, my God. You know, and yeah, I rediscovered that, and I bought it. It was one of those album cover ones. But yeah, check it out. He was nice enough to send us also a winner is you, and then it's also even a little handheld section in the back as well, and unreleased games. So check that out right there.
It's a super fun read.
Epic Games. They're not busy with the new Unreal, but they're busy buying Bandcamp.
Yeah,
the independent music site.
Yep. And
not so much independent anymore.
No, not independent anymore. And so the internet basically lost its independent music store. I did not get a chance to look into this one, like the actual, like, nitty gritty as much. I have a feeling that Epic knows that if they change anything, it won't necessarily be good on the outside. They're going to have to keep the place running, I think, as
yeah,
it's going to have to keep running business as usual. And I hope they keep the Bandcamp Fridays thing going, because that really helped a lot of artists throughout the pandemic, where I think it's usually one Friday a month or one Friday every 2 months. They give 100% of all sales to the artists. So there's no fees or anything like that. So a lot of artists have cleaned up. A lot of people wait for Bandcamp Friday to make sure that they can give all the money to the artists they want to support. So I have a feeling things like that are going to, I hope.
They have to continue, otherwise
people are going to, they're going to end up with a dead platform. Either they have to continue to make it usable and by people who are already using it, or they're just going to go find something else.
That's what Epic basically said. You'll still have the same control over how you offer your music. Bandcamp Fridays will continue as planned, and the daily will keep highlighting the diverse, amazing music on the site. However, behind the scenes, we're working with Epic to expand internationally and push development forward across Bandcamp, from basics like our album pages, mobile apps, merch tools, payment system, and search and discovery features, to newer initiatives like our vinyl pressing and live streaming services. So you have a huge infusion of cash, and then Epic's like, well, we can make money doing this. Like, why not? So, yeah, like you said, like, as long as it continues the same, and maybe Epic brings in new features, then everyone wins, hopefully. Because yeah, Epic doesn't know anything about music, but they do know about, you know, obviously interfaces and platforms and publishing things internationally. Like, they can help it out, I guess. I don't know anything about Bandcamp.
I feel like Bandcamp probably was doing just fine on its own. I mean, Bandcamp has been the stalwart for years.
But They like the money.
No, they like the money. There's nothing else here. It's not going to benefit Bandcamp in any way. I don't think it's going to negatively impact the user experience for a lot of people on Bandcamp. I really hope that genuinely and truly
nothing happens. You think? Oh no, they're going to pump in money to make more money. Epic, absolutely will. I would think.
We'll see.
They have so much money to play with. I mean, otherwise, they wouldn't have made this. Like, this is not their core business, obviously. Right. You know, you make that Unreal game anytime you want. You know, just saying. Anytime.
Speaking of first-person shooters.
Speaking of Ukraine.
And Ukraine. There is a new Doom 2 level made by John Romero in support of Ukraine. John Romero hasn't made a Doom 2 level, it says here, since the game came out in 1994. But this one, titled One Humanity, is for the PC versions of the game only, meaning it hasn't been pushed to like the, it's been pretty good. Like the Switch versions, the console ports of the Doom games have been pretty good about getting like the new updates. I'm wondering if this might get to it eventually. Anyways, for £5, or about $6.67 USD, 100% of the proceeds will go directly to the cause. And you can buy it at John Romero's official website.
It's a WAD file.
Yep.
The good old WADs. And you load that stuff up. Is there an easy interface? If you play like the Steam version, is there a drop-in thing for that? Or do you have to still go through the command box?
Yeah, probably. You'd probably just download the WAD, and I would assume something like... even something like, I'm so behind on Doom, but, so I always reference an older one, but I'm sure something like Z-Doom, you could just load it up. There's all sorts of ways to play WAD.
There's a user interface. Yeah. It's just command line like it used to be back in the Stone.
Right, no, there's got to be a way. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a program you could open up and just open a WAD file like a,
like
a document for, just
like
play
an, like an emulator. You click on, you open it. That makes sense. Like back in the day, we used to do the command line, the fucking the Alien versus Predator one. You probably played that as well. That was one of the
It was like the big one.
Yeah.
I definitely want to play this, though. I mean, it's not a secret that Doom, specifically Doom 2, is one of my favorite games of all time. Love it to death.
It has that weird look to it. Oh, Brew.
Anyway, so yeah, I would like to check this out, and you should, too.
Guy was sent to prison for buying a Pokemon card. It's a little more complicated than that, but this is from a Polygon article. Nicole Carpenter. Man sentenced to 3 years in federal prison over a Pokemon card. A $57,000 Charizard is now government property. George Mann was sentenced to 3 years in prison after using COVID-19 relief money to purchase a rare Charizard Pokemon card.
I think we heard about this story early on, but now this is like this is his comeuppance.
Yes, okay. So the Department of Justice released the sentencing and a news release issued Monday. 31-year-old Vinath Udhamsingh was awarded an economic injury disaster loan that's different than a PPP loan, by the way, for $85,000 after claiming to own a small business that supported 10 employees. These loans were created as part of Congress's pandemic relief plan and intended to be used for businesses to pay workers and rent. Once he got the money, the Department of Justice said he used $57,789 to buy a Charizard card.
Jesus Christ.
A card matching this description, a first edition shadowless and holographic Charizard card with a 9.5 gem mint rating, was sold at the PWCC marketplace for that price in late December. So I'm guessing that the government, once they give you these loans, are allowed to look at your books to make sure that, I'm guessing that's part of the conditions.
Yeah, which probably.
And they must have said, like, hey, that's a weird outgoing thing of to this auction house of $57,000, and the probably laughs they had at the DOJ looking at some lower level employee like tracking this. Oh, they bought a Pokemon card. Okay, we're gonna get the charges against this person now. U.S. District Court Judge Dudley Bowen ordered Udhamsingh to pay $10,000 on top of the $85,000 in restitution and 3 years in prison, and will have 3 years of supervised release after the 3 years in prison. He agreed to turn over the card to prosecutors. So now the government has a Charizard card that I guess they put these up for government auction at some point. You always see commercials like government auctions have confiscated from drug dealers like boats and houses and cars. There'll be a Pokemon card eventually at one of these auctions, which I think is hysterical.
That is.
Government owns a Pokemon card.
You know what the government doesn't own, Pat?
What do they not
The government
own?
Does not own UltimateNintendo.com, where you can go and get stuff. Do it, Pat. What do you can we can get?
Well, after that stellar transition, you can get,
Twitch on Wednesday night. You can click the join button next to subscribe.
Then you're screwing up my money. You got the certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks. You got the enamel pins. You got the RBI baseball stickers, and now you have, you can't see it, it's too high up. You have the Yoshi combat print limited to 22 produced. They're on the site, signed by Yoshi, the CG artist who worked on Star Wars, Walking Dead, Mandalorian, works on everything. He's a genius, and he did Major Combat in that video. And all proceeds go to my pal Yoshi. I don't see a cent of that at UltimateNintendo.com as a way to pay back my pal Yoshi on that right there. And yes, I'm on Twitch Wednesday nights.
Twitch.
You click the join button or what you said?
I was just reading the highlighted stuff, man.
Oh, God, Ian, you're the worst.
Click the join button next to subscribe.
Oh, God, I never read those stuff. Unreleased N64 game.
Yeah, Carnival Senzo's Adventure. You want to tell me a little bit about that one?
Force of Illusion tweeted, today we have quite a special one. We've released Carnival Senzo's Adventure, a canceled N64 title developed by Terraglyph Interactive Studios. It was based on the animated film by the same name. I don't remember the film.
Yeah, neither do I. This is the first time hearing of that.
And it was first run off to the public at E3 99 in an unfinished state. A great video was put out by Tony from Hardford Games. It already has a ton of views.
Welcome back to the Hardford Games channel.
That's him. 14,000 views. And this is cool because I knew about this couple months in the making, because Tony is writing the unreleased N64 game section for an upcoming certain N64 guidebook.
Ho, ho.
So it was fun because during the process, there was a couple of games that he knew about that were like, okay, this one's going to be dumped. We're trying to get it. So like, so this is going to be explained in that section of the book. And watch this video. It's 20 minutes. Tony goes through the game, talks about it and the history of it. And yeah, Tony's a good dude.
Good Tony.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Good, Tony.
And Gabe's been good lately as well.
Yes.
Gabe from Valve.
So Gabe has been in the news a bit lately. He's been around. He's been up front. He's been around and up front since the release of the Steam Deck. He's a public figure.
He's making the rounds.
He's making the rounds. He was even hand-delivering some of them.
Really?
Yeah, he was handling
like a fucking Domino's commercial.
In like the Seattle area or wherever they're based. Yeah, he was walking around hand-delivering some of these.
Okay.
Imagine another certain CEO doing that with a certain...
No, I don't, because it doesn't exist.
Anyway. He's been in the news more. And I believe we talked a little bit last week about how Valve stated that 50% of all of their Bitcoin transactions were fraudulent. When they had Bitcoin, and they've already banned cryptocurrency games from the storefront. Newell had more words to say, basically said that the volatility of cryptocurrency makes it impossible to be something that you could, you know, price things with on a store, because you're paying 99 cents one day for something that's going to fluctuate to $4.98 the next day.
Yeah, it's not currency anymore.
Right.
It has to be somewhat consistent. It's
crazy. And he said the people who are currently active in the space are not usually good actors, as we've seen and discussed on here many times, looking at all the problems that have been going on. I also like that he also tackles the whole, this is not new aspect. This is just reinventing the wheel for a lot of it. One of the big things that they talk about in the metaverse is customizable avatars and stuff like that. And he says, apparently, no one who thinks this is impressive has ever heard of or played an MMO, because... All you're trying to do with the metaverse is create an MMO that has no action or fun in it. I mean, that's literally all you're doing. And in terms of customizable avatars, he even points that out. You go into Final Fantasy XIV and, you know, look around. Everyone looks different. There's entire marketplaces dedicated to, you know, the clothing and dyeing the clothes and getting, you know, custom outfits. And so... Yeah, I mean, he seems like a pretty sharp guy. Definitely not in NFT's corner. Doesn't look like Valve will be dealing with NFTs in any way anytime soon. I'd point out, Gabe's looking healthy lately.
I was going to say, he's got the similar style to you. He has the same black rim glasses. He's got, yeah. He's got the same long hair. I'm looking back and forth. Like, that could be you in like 20 years.
Yeah, maybe. That's fine.
He seems happy.
I'll take it.
Sat happy and fine. Sorry, and I was thrown off here. I have to, on the podcast, issue an official reprimand on the podcast. Uh-huh. Sorry to embarrass you. Uh-huh. It seemed like during the podcast...
Oh, I'm not embarrassed.
You called me out on Twitter.
I did. I did call you
while
out
while we were recording, it seems like.
Yeah.
Can't believe Pat has never put honey on fried chicken.
I can't.
Referencing the exclusive...
That's right.
Patreon podcast, patreon.com/CU podcast, and trying to ether me via food shaming
not
on Twitter.
Not trying to ether, just wanted to see what the general take on the situation was.
Yeah,
there are some people defending you.
Okay, I'm going to the defense. Let's see. Our pal Tom said, "Ever been to churches? They give you honey packets. Put that shit on the chicken and the buns." Someone said, "I have not either." That was Jim. What about hot sauce? I mean, it's not exactly ketchup on a burger. Thank you, Jumpin' Jack Doritos, for that. So there, you're right. There's some people back me up. That's a thing. I 1,000% can, and this is from an ad. So Ian is starting to get ratioed a little bit. Ian is starting to get, so go ratio Ian on that tweet from you know, 10:25
that other one is I can 1000% believe that you have never had that's because that's weird, man. You're weird.
Okay. Oh, I'm weird now.
You're weird.
I'm weird for lots of reasons, not because of that, Ian.
Every day is D&D Day with our new sponsor, Viridian Dice.
Every day?
Every single day! Viridian are sellers of Dungeons & Dragons dice and tabletop gaming accessories. And if you're thinking, Ian, I have enough dice, surely you do not. Red dice, blue dice, old dice, and new dice. Ones with little stars, Santa Claus, glitter.
Aren't all dice the same? I've played Monopoly, I've played Trouble, you know, you throw the dice now?
Absolutely not. It's so important when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons or any other tabletop role-playing game to have the right dice for the job. Sometimes you've got your lucky dice. You want your blue dice if you're working with water. You want your heavy metal dice for your important roles. These days you can get a huge variety of cool dice. Viridian's got a massive catalog. These aren't just your grandpa's plain opaque dice either. There's swirled, mica, metal, hand-poured resin, gemstone, and more. They have fan-favorite brands like Chessex, HD, and Q Workshop.
Maybe I can get Frank back on the D&D wagon.
You could, since their prices are very reasonable and you can easily browse and sort by color, style, material, brand, or theme. They're a Syracuse, New York small business run by friend of the show, Mike Saltzman. He started out of his game room in 2019 making 3D printed condition rings and got into dice after he noticed how overpriced many big dice sellers were. Mike is obsessed with offering good deals, making his obsessive problem your solution.
I love dice solutions!
And he also offers condition rings, 3D printed rings that you can attach to your minifigs that describe the condition. So if you are blessed or if you've got spirit weapons going, if you're invisible, you can keep all of that visually represented on your playfield very easily. They're awesome. Make Viridian your dice solution today by going to ViridianDice.com and using our promo code CUPODCAST to save 10%. For the entire month of March. That's 10% off your order at ViridianDice.com with our code CUPODCAST.
They're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as Viridian Dice, all one word. Tell them Pat and Ian sent you.
Viridian Dice! Let's overthrow Big Die!
You know what's weird, Ian?
Huh.
Nintendo's Amico has been very weird.
Oh, yeah, it's been weird.
So, after we talked about the last podcast, them shutting up, down the Start Engine, the fourth crowdfunding campaign, and going away, a couple of weird things happened. We already had known that the new CEO, Phil Adam, planned a vacation around this time.
Yes.
Which is bizarre, but okay. Plan a vacation. But also two other things happened after we record. I'm not saying it's coincidence. One might have happened that day, but one the next day. The former CEO, Tommy Tallarico, and now CCO, president, whatever. He was responsible for this train wreck. He privated his Twitter account, first off. That happened, or protected, as it's called. The other thing that happened was they, instead of having a – Phil Adams said we're going to have a production or a release update at the end of February. Didn't happen.
Right.
Instead, they put out a business update via email.
Well, they let it hang for a couple days, too.
Yeah, it was like March 2nd or 3rd, yeah. Whatever it was.
Right.
They put out a business update email. You want me to read that, Ian?
Yes, please.
I go back to my email, which is going off because people now are emailing me about putting honey on chicken. mother. And so they put out a business update. Keep in mind, this update was not put on Start Engine. This update was not put on for the Republic investors. I checked. There was no update about it. The last update was January 10th from Tommy on Republic. And if I checked Fig, there'd probably be no update there as well. Who the hell knows about Fundable with that? So the point is that a lot of people don't know what's happening, and Telvin has basically gone dark. They've gone dark after this.
Yes,
that's the bad news. But here's the update from Phil Adams, CEO. I wanted to take a moment to provide an update and also extend my apologies. It's from Wednesday the 2nd. As you know, it was my goal to communicate with you by the end of February. However, over the last few weeks, we started discussions with potential investors / acquirers outside of the Start Engine universe. The Start Engine universe. As we continue to work with them on a deal structure and terms, it's like a cinematic universe. It's ridiculous.
I'm thinking of the crowdfunding, like yeah. A crowdfunding universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we continue to work with them on a deal structure and terms, it has been agreed that we maintain a quiet period while negotiating. The magnitude of this type of deal will invariably have an influence on our path forward, but we are excited about the potential of a new group's involvement with Intellivision, and we'll update you as soon as we are able. Thank you for your continued support and patience. Phil Adam.
So quiet period is an actual term. It's an actual term.
Oh, is it a business term?
Looking it up here on Wikipedia. In United States securities law, a quiet period is a period of time in which companies refrain from communicating with investors to avoid unfairly disclosing material, non-public information to certain investors when the company has not yet publicly communicated this information. When a company is raising capital from the public, this historically has meant quiet period of time extended from the time a company files a registration statement with the SEC until SEC staff declared the registration statement effective. During that period, the federal securities laws limited what information a company and related parties can release to the public. So basically, it means we have to be careful not to say shit that we can't say.
That has to do with SEC statements. Right. This is not that.
No. Well, okay, right. So basically, he's throwing around a term.
Yes.
That does not make sense in this situation.
It's context.
Right. There is no reason for them to have to go into a quiet period.
That's what I thought. It sounds like, well, this is a business term for when we're doing something
official.
They just
feel like it sounds close enough.
A little sneaky, Phil.
Yeah.
A little sneaky with that.
A little sneaky.
Especially since you have people that are you have their pre-order money for years. You have customers.
A little sneaky, Phil.
And then you have a ton of investors that, again, aren't officially investing in Intellivision proper, which we'll get into. But there are some people, if you look at the SEC document, there are some people there that have put money in as well, but not as much as, obviously, the board getting back loans to themselves. So what is going on here? Are they buying time between potential bankruptcy or buying time for an actual manufacturing and release date? Are they actually trying to engage with talks with investors to try to save this?
Again, I feel like at this point, a lot of the words they're using aren't even meant to instill hope in customers or the people who are hanging on. I think it's to make them feel more legitimate about themselves as they fall apart.
So you think it's bullshit?
I think it's bullshit.
One's trying to acquire them.
Or someone is for, like, we're talking very, very low amounts of money.
Or a cursory sort of, yeah, I'm interested, let's talk about it. What do you have?
Because this is the thing, and this is what surprises me, even among some of the people who have seemed to be pretty savvy about what's been going on. They realize that the Amico, you know, is not But there's a lot of people who still, like, who have been, I guess, anti-Amico, or at least, like, what is going on with this, who still think that there is, like, was effective enough, because there are still people out there who think there's something, there's enough in Intellivision somewhere to be purchased. What are you getting? You are getting an idea around, you're getting the idea of an Android system with nothing nailed in place even far enough to have started.
No infrastructure.
Promoting units. Obviously, you screwed up your first manufacturing run with Arc. And then you have the games. There are people who, I think it's just to keep things in discussion. But there are people who think that these games are going to get released on, like, the Switch. I mean, maybe, but no one's going to buy them, because this always goes back to what I said. At the end of it, if everything was perfect and the Amico came out, we would still not be talking about it in a year's time, because there's nothing there.
They are
bottom barrel video games on a system that is outdated, on outdated hardware.
Reportedly made from, like, German college students were making some of these games.
I could put $10 into someone's Steam wallet and you could go on Steam and end up with 10 games that would be better than this.
Sure.
And that's what I think is so frustrating to me, is the amount of people who are still thinking that if I'm saying this right, a release is the success, like getting the system out is
the
success.
We always said that's the start of the ecosystem.
If this thing actually came out, it would fall over on its face because there's nothing there.
It's on a toaster oven. A toaster, you buy a toaster, that's all the toaster does ever. That's it. You don't have to worry about it. You just got to buy bread for it. This, you need, to support with new games. You need to support the back end. You need to support the cloud. You need to support a customer service. You need to support if something's wrong with the hardware. God forbid there was an issue like how Switch had to deal with drifting Joy-Cons. Like, this is a smaller company.
Look
like,
at systems so that have been laughed off the face of the planet. The Jaguar, the 3DO, the fucking Virtual Boy.
And those were huge companies.
All catastrophic failures, and they all came out and had games.
Yes.
Playable games. I mean, I
tell Hyperscan, which is similar to how this console is in terms of like what you're getting out of it, basically.
The Virtual Boy sucked to play, but man, there was actually some good games on the Virtual Boy.
And it was Nintendo had all the money in the world to push it and promote it and still didn't help.
Yeah, I don't know. At some point, people have to stop pretending like this was ever going to work, that this was ever going to be a video game system. Even the people who realize that
it's
going to
be a game system, but not a viable
game system with stuff that's worth playing on it. There has to be value to this stuff for people to want to buy it. There's no value to an Astro Smash that took fucking college kids a week to make.
Well, maybe that one wasn't college kids, but some of these, like the fucking pool game was a tech demo.
Sure.
You know,
10 levels of skiing is not going to set the world on fire.
The Snafu game that you saw parts of, that's a tech demo. Like, these are all tech demos. Speaking of tech demos, Ian, and Astro Smash, you can play Hater Smash. Now, it's downloadable for free. I found about this on the Intellivision underscore Amico Reddit. It was made in one day by Gator Ooze, who also was the intrepid person who went through a lot of the remember the SEC filing that came out around the Start Engine and went through a lot of the details.
What a lovely document that was.
It was great. What a miscalculation that campaign was.
Boy, was that a gamble plus, that did not go
any
well.
Investor can public potential investor can look at that document and be like, wow, this company is in trouble, has a ton of debt and owes a lot of money. Why the hell would I want to acquire this piece of shit? Anyway, this is what good old Gatoroo said. I felt sorry for Amico fans in this worrying waiting period, so I made them a game where they can merrily blast away at all the Amico haters and have some Astro Smashing fun. Download it here, and then unzip it to your hard drive and just double-click hatersmash.exe to play. This was made in one day, so don't judge me too harshly. The sound of most of the graphics were asses I already had. High scores are saved. Mine was 996 after a couple of plays. Hit escape to quit during play. The point is this. In terms of the engine functionality, this is exactly the same as the Amico Astro Smash.
Sure.
It's exactly the same. Like, right. We're talking about, you know, a game that any person can make in Unity in one day, at least have the engine done. You're shooting up at these objects come towards the ground and they split up when you shoot them. That's the game. They even put in the little hyper slide thing. The little
oh, the dash button.
The little dash is put in.
Is it activated by swiping the touchscreen?
No, it's just a mouse push.
Easy mechanic that everyone was just going to pick up naturally.
Yes. So check out Hater Smash for free there when you want. The point is this, is that these were always this company was always banking on cheap games and tricking you to thinking you needed a $250 now to $350 device to play these cheap ass games. They were trying to insult your intelligence and be like, well, these games will be free on your phone or like a dollar or two on Steam, but we want you to spend $300 to get the system and then spend $10 to $20 on top of that.
And this is what I'm trying to get at to some people that like who are still holding on to a little bit of hope that there's something there. No one is champing at the bit.
Chomping?
No, it's champing.
Champing at the
it's
bit. Oh,
champing.
New term, champing.
Yes, it's champing at the bit. No one's champing at the bit to acquire. Again, you're taking on their word that like 20 of these are finished. No one would want these games if they were all done. No, I mean, what is 10 levels of skiing going to get you on the Switch at $299? Maybe 1,000 downloads. These games.
1,000.
As we've seen, these games are still lots of these are still half finished, not optimized,
or they're short games anyway.
Placeholder graphics. That's what I'm saying. It's not worth it. There's no money.
If you charge more than
money,
if you charge more than a dollar for that skiing game, what was it? 10 levels.
10 levels of skiing is what I have officially changed the name
to. If you charge more than a dollar for that.
It's like Fred Couples 36 holes of awesome golf or whatever it was on the Sega Genesis.
But that sounds better. 36 holes, a lot more intense levels.
But 10 levels of skiing. Tommy Tallarico's 10 levels of skiing.
But the point is that if you charge more than a dollar for these games.
I said probably John Alvarado's 10 levels of skiing.
More than a dollar. You'd be struggling to get 2 out of 5 star rating on Steam or on, like, no one's gonna.
Hans Ipich's 10 levels of skiing. That's who it is.
Hans Ipich's 10 levels of government funding.
10 levels of government funding
for my shitty ass games. Make that game. It could be like Lemonade Stand.
I'm seeing Hans like skating down a fucking mountain of paperwork, just like reefs of paper.
By the way, there were some reports that Ipich was involved.
Hans
was involved with
in an underground fight club.
Hans, I can't deny, confirm nor deny this, was involved potentially on the board or people that decided where the grant money went years back.
Yeah, I saw something along.
So it's like, this gets griftier and griftier. This whole venture.
Let's have another caffeine.
That, for sure, Ian. You just enjoy your tea with the little. Jar condom.
It's a fucking cozy, man. It keeps cozy, it warm.
But it's so big.
It is so big.
All right. So we got Hater Smash. But actually, okay, let's be serious. When you're buying a television, what are you getting? You are getting the trademark, the little running man, which is not even
You're getting the little guy.
You're getting the little guy.
Do you think you're going to get the sign? Do you get the sign?
You get that sign that gave away. Yeah, the sign in the office.
Get the sign?
What is that? Where's that sign? Is that sign in the Utah offices? You get the iconic running man.
Aren't these rental offices too? Do they truck out the sign and hang it up every working day?
I don't know. But the point. Okay, so the running man logo is you can't even call it a logo because that's just how their graphics were designed, and that guy showed up in like all their games, baseball, you know, soccer, right? Like
that's more or less that was the guy I think in Cloudy Mountain.
So that's not really a logo, but you get that. You get the Intellivision first party games. If you're buying Intellivision, you get the first party games, right? So you could in theory make money off of that, like there was the Evercade did a little physical media pack of games. I mean, at this point, though, not a lot of people want those old games. There's a lot of ways to play them on the flashbacks, the version of the flashback that came out 10, 12, 14, 15 years ago. All the little crappy plug and plays that Tommy lied about and said that. I'll never forgive you on this, Tommy. And I asked for evidence. You claimed that more Intellivision plug and plays were sold than NES classics, which would be about 3 million. You had the fucking balls to try to fucking lie about that bullshit. In what universe did they sell 3 million Intellivision plug-and-plays when they didn't sell fucking barely 3 million Intellivisions when the console came out? Are you fucking crazy? Anyway, sorry about that. I'll never forgive him for that lie. That's when you knew time was full of shit, when he was lying about that stuff years back, by the way. When he was bold-faced lying about that stuff. But you get the Intellivision first properties, and then you get like the potential patents on their over-engineered controller. If you buy Intellivision, like if those patents go through, you get a controller that is useless for playing a lot of modern games anyway. That's what you get. That's what you get. So I don't think anyone's going to rescue the Amico. Even if they acquire Intellivision Entertainment, you're not going to see them release the Amico. There's just too much money it's going to take to do it.
Yeah, the Amico's not getting released. I don't think enough of the games are in a shippable, buyable state that would make them money to even think about forming a publication imprint.
You can do that, but you're still not going to recoup your costs.
Well, no, and that's what I'm saying. There's not enough there.
Bankruptcy is the only route.
So I don't, yeah.
Bankruptcy protects you from your debtors. That's basically what it does. So you go to bankruptcy, then everyone that's that the company owes money to, in this case, members of the board and Tommy himself, they can pick apart the carcass of what the property what the company has, the intellectual properties, the logos, the trademarks. That's what this is leading towards, in my opinion. That's what this is heading towards. And again, if you put money in through Republic or Fig or Star Engine, you're not investing, at least for Fig and Republic, you were investing in Fig and Republic.
Right.
Technically. So even if they sold the company, you get absolutely nothing. If you put in $10,000 for a Ferrari ride, you get absolutely nothing if the company is sold off. If the company was sold for $1 billion to someone, you get zero. You're entitled to no money through those investments.
I remember one of the most pathetic things was when that dude made fun of me for getting the type of car that Tommy drove wrong and called me poor.
He called you poor?
It was something along those lines. Like, he was, like, insulting me.
Shirtless Shill called you poor?
It was along those lines for not knowing the difference between, I think, like, a Lamborghini and a Ferrari or something like that. Yeah. It was a touchstone moment for him, I think.
And this is the type of person that Tommy thinks he could have partnered with in order to try to take us down a peg. Because that was a lot of the strategy.
Petty fucking bitches who will say anything.
I know. And then you just look worse and worse. And then they all just turn, all these rats just turn on each other. They all just, because they're just rats and snakes, and they just turn on each other.
You got to make sure that you know all of your, like, icons of, like, being rich. If you don't, you're a bad person and you're poor.
Yeah. All right. That's something else to add to the list. Okay. That's something else to add to the list when we'll do the victory laps eventually. That's fair.
Anyway.
All right, Ian, we have a Patreon poll.
Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, you sprinkle a little money on the screen, and you get...
What? You do what? You throw coins at your screen?
You get a full video podcast. You get bonus bits.
That Ian can shame me about on Twitter while we're talking about it, apparently.
Absolutely.
Go ratio Ian's
just
tweet,
takes two
please.
Seconds.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that, too.
Bonus bits. Oh, right. Poll topics.
A writing. And this poll topic.
Yeah, hangouts.
Hangout once a month.
We got to do a hangout.
This weekend maybe we'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay. In second place, hardest games we have played/beaten, 34%. Maybe Paperboy. And then in first place, misfit games we like that aren't talked about. See, I take misfit to be different than a hidden gem. Misfit to me means a game that maybe is just out of the ordinary and just could be weird. And that's why it's not talked about or played that much. A hidden gem is just a good game that people didn't hear about for whatever reason. To me, but you, I mean, they can also. There's a concentric circle there. Is it a concentric circle?
I think in terms of misfit games that I enjoy that are very strange, one would be Money Idol Exchanger.
What is this called?
Money
Idol Exchanger. Look that up.
It's a puzzle game. That was
Money Puzzle Exchanger.
It was called Money Puzzle Exchanger was what they called it in a U.S. release, but the actual original name is Money Idol Exchanger.
SNK game.
It
was on
not SNK game, but it was on. It was on the MVS and the AES
from Face.
Yep, from Face, published by Athena on the PlayStation.
So why is this a misfit game?
Because it's a puzzle game about changing coins. So it's just a weird concept. All the puzzle pieces are different yen denominations, and you match them up to create bigger amounts and clear the screen.
Oh, you shoot it from the bottom like Puzzle Bobble?
Yeah,
or Bust
essentially.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
But you don't angle it or anything. Yeah, it's a really, really fun game.
Oh, you don't angle it?
No, you just slide left and right and shoot upwards instead of angling like Puzzle
Bobble.
And
you make change.
Yeah, and it causes chain reactions as well.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So, for example, if there's like a 5-cent piece... You get
5 5-cent pieces together, and it's going to turn into a 25-cent piece. 2 25-cent pieces together turn into a 50-cent piece.
So they transform into the larger denominations.
Yes.
Okay, then they eliminate the large. What's the largest denomination?
I can't remember what it gets up to. I think a dollar.
Okay, that's interesting.
It is. It's a shitload of fun. Really good time. Love the game. It's got a whole series of characters and a story that I never understood, but it's...
There's a story?
Yeah, there's a story, too. Like all good puzzle games, there's a story mode. And then as far as other misfit games, I don't actually love this one, but I feel like it needs to come up in any discussion about misfit games, whatever that means. This is how it was phrased. Toilet Kids on the PC Engine. Toilet Kids on the PC Engine.
Which I don't think I still own. That's one I never got.
I have that. And that one just keeps climbing up in value. And it shouldn't climb up in value.
Because it's a crap game.
Because it's a garbage game. I wish it was good.
It just has a rep.
But, on normal mode, the enemies take way too many bullets to fucking take down. Big butt spiders and poop monsters and things like that.
It's $170. It'd be like a $50 game.
Yeah, I know. I think I got it for $40, and even at $40, it felt like it was too much.
Who is driving up the? Why is there a run on this game?
Because it's weird. It's weird. That's it. It's a Misfit game. People love Misfit.
If I went to Japan, I'd probably find a store for a lot cheaper, right? Probably find it like laying around.
Maybe.
Any other PC Engine ones that are weird you can think of?
Yeah, there's
Misfit games.
Oh, probably the Choaniki games. Those are the ones with the big muscle dudes.
Oh, little homoeroticism
that shoot the men's beam out of the hole in their bald forehead. Yeah. The first one is actually really, really good, and it's not that. It's very weird, but, like, the focus wasn't on those dudes yet. Those dudes are options. They're, like, side characters.
And they just became the one. Game.
They became the game.
They became the mascot?
Icho Aniki, which is the sequel for Love Choaniki for the PC Engine. That one's fun because it's you play as the dudes, but, like, you use, like, fighting game inputs to fire off, like, certain shots and stuff. It's very strange.
Okay.
But yeah, the PC Engine's got tons of them. What about you?
Oh, God. Here comes me. Misfit games. You know what? I think The Haunting is a Misfit. The Haunting starring Poltergeist is a Misfit game.
Okay.
It's a weird game.
It is a weird game.
Why'd you?
It's just a very... I haven't... That's a... Like, for you, that's just a weird thing to pull out of nowhere. I mean, one, it's a Genesis game. That's strange.
I'm going to ratio you. I reviewed that game in a Path the NES Punk video. I guess you haven't seen that one, Ian.
I have
That's
not.
How I know about it. You didn't know I did that as a video?
No. But that's still very strange. It's an odd pick for you.
I'm ratioing you right now. No. That game is bizarre because it's at one of the last years that EA tried to do strange things in games, like the mid-90s. I think it's like 94 it came out. And
they had lots of interesting releases for the Genesis.
And then that was it. That was it for interesting games. So probably because they didn't sell that way. It's an uncommon game. It could be very uncommon, Poltergeist, The Haunting. So in The Haunting, you have stages of the game. The whole point is that you want to scare people out of the house. It's almost like Beetlejuice. It's like Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And then there's scare points in each house. You have to time them. You build up like spirit energy to unlock these scares, and it's a very gory game in terms of, like, there's blood in terms of the scares and things like that.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And you go around the house. It's all kind of open, each house stage, and you just scare them enough to get the family. There's four members of the family. There's the husband and wife and the two kids. Again, scare out the house. And it's challenging. There's a weird, like, purgatory netherworld that it's like your last chance live if you get sent down to it. You know, if you run out of, like, the spirit energy. I haven't played it in forever. The look on your face when I said that game is almost like I could have said anything, like the weirdest thing in the world that I just said.
I just, man, it was...
And you had no idea I did that as a video. It's one of
my... I mean, I might have. If you... No, I probably would not have remembered that ever if you put a gun to my head.
Floating Frank Ghost Head? You never saw it.
Sounds like I'm missing one.
Holy shit. Ian, what the fuck have I been doing? I probably said, hey, Ian, I spent, like, you know, 80 hours in this video. You want to watch it? Oh, yeah, I'll watch it, Pat, while you're at Lunar. Never watched it. All right, so check out The Haunting. And the reason I said that is because the NES, they have weird things, but nothing that weird and strange. But the NES has weird Misfit games as well. I think Wally Bear is a Misfit game, Ian.
Wally Bear would be a Misfit game. Wally Bear is but is it, though? The whole message is anti-Misfit.
It's a weird game. I see what you mean, though. It's like the Bible games are Misfit games, even though they're supposed to be wholesome. Bible Adventures is a Misfit game. If you can use little baby Moses as a weapon and toss him around.
Misfit, you know, in the way that, like, the goody two-shoes changing.
No, it's baby Jesus you're throwing
baby
around.
Baby Moses.
Oh, there's baby Moses.
It's baby Moses.
That's right. Okay, sorry. Baby Moses.
Misfit in, like, the way that, like, the goody two-shoes kid changing the color of his shoelaces is Misfit.
Okay. I consider the Bible games Misfit games. I absolutely do. They are bizarre. And any of the Color Dreams / Wizentry games are Pesterminator is a Misfit fucking game.
Yeah, the Jesus Freaks were Misfits in the 70s, I guess. So you could say.
The Jesus Freaks were Misfits in the 70s.
You don't know about the Jesus Freak movement?
No.
Weird stuff, man. Look it up.
Like, they're like hippie Jesus people in the 70s?
Yeah.
God, hippies are the worst.
They are. But let's not spiral me off on that one for another half an hour.
Or one of the best South Park episodes when Carmen had to round up all the hippies and get them out of South Park. Anyway, so that's a Misfit game. any of those unlicensed games are like, some of them are decent, but like something like Little Red Hood, the HES game, it's just like that's not a game that you would ever say, yeah, that's a standard sort of game.
There's nothing standard about it,
about that, or any of those. Is there any Misfit? Shut off the email. Are there any Misfit Super Nintendo games that you can think of? I have a couple in my head.
Headphone Jack and Dukas, or whatever the fuck the name was.
Dukas.
Yeah,
it's Mojack, isn't it?
Mohawk and Headphone Jack.
Mohawk and Headphone Jack. Dukas, what did you say?
Dukas. Yeah.
Captain Novalin.
Sure.
Is a Misfit game. Learning about insulin. Time Cop is a Misfit game.
Yes.
It's actually not a horrible game. It's not. No, it's bad. It's bad. It's a bad game.
It's a bad game.
Because this is supposed to be ones that we like, right? That's what the topic is.
Yeah.
No, this is games that we like. I like Time Cop because it's so bizarre. And there's a loop in it. Read about it in a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. It's actually one of the first games I reviewed for that.
Time Cop?
Yes, Time Cop. There's a looping song, at least in the first stage, where there's an audible FBI, get on it. And it's like, you're not in the FBI in Time Cop.
No, you're not.
You're like some weird government agency. You're not in the FBI. And it's really weird.
Do you think it was just like a stock clip that they had?
I don't
somewhere?
Know. It's either in the intro screen or in the first level. But that's a Misfit game that I'm talking about. You know what's a Misfit game while we're on? Because there is sort of digitized graphics.
Can we get a counter for how many times Misfit is said during this
Misfit,
segment?
Misfit. You know what? I think Mad Dog McCree is a Misfit game.
Why?
It's bizarre. The time it came out, it was bizarre. There hadn't been a game done like that in forever, since like the 70s, probably on a projector. And it was always one of those weird things to just... I think it's sort of a Misfit game to be... I don't know. I just think there's something about that game looking back in the arcade, 1 and 2, where you're a misfit with a revolver pretending to be a cowboy. Am I really reaching here? I'm reaching. Okay.
You know what's I think we've gone long enough.
You know what's a misfit game? No. Huh. The Time Traveler game that Sega put out, the hologram game, that's a Misfit game.
Okay, sure.
That's a Misfit game. That's what I was thinking about with
that's
cowboys.
That's very weird.
That's a weird
Plays like a
game.
Laser disc game, but it's holograms. Very strange.
Yeah, it's a little more... it's a little bit more than... Because you can control your character more than in a...
Sure, but it's still all based on timing and input.
It is. But there's more control over that character than in a Dragon's Lair. There's a lot more in terms of that. Slightly more, not a lot more than that. You know what's a Misfit game, Ian? Tom Sawyer. Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Yep, you fight dragons in the clouds in level 5.
Do you really?
Yeah, definitely.
Does it have anything to do with the book at all? Was that like a...
You go down a river.
You go down a river?
Yeah, on a raft.
Did you read Tom Sawyer?
When I was... Very young. I read Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn when I was probably 8 or 9.
Well, I think we all did.
Yeah, and I liked them, but I have not read them since.
I remember Huck Finn a lot more than Tom Sawyer.
I think I do, too.
Tom was a dick.
Yeah.
From what I remember. Huck Finn,
I seem to remember being better. And I haven't revisited any Twain, but I read Mark Twain up through my teens.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we need one more Misfit game, Ian.
Nope.
One more Misfit game. Danny Sullivan's in the Heat,
no?
Not a Misfit game.
Not a Misfit game.
You don't consider Adventure Island a little bit of a Misfit game? A little bit. It's a little weird, Adventure Island. It's a little bit weird.
It's weird in its structure, how it plays. It's very specific.
I was thinking about the themes.
Well, the themes are weird, but I would absolutely not call it a normal platformer game either. It's strange. Rigid timer.
Yeah, the eating the fruit to stay alive is kind of a weird element. Knocking the heads off of those bosses is kind of a really weird thing in those games. Princess Tomato is Misfit. Now I'm just looking at my shelf. I think Princess Tomato is a Misfit game. Three Stooges is a Misfit game. That's a weird game in structure and in content. And the Three Stooges are Misfits themselves, aren't they? Can we agree on that? That's where we end the segment.
Case closed.
All right. We got voicemails, Ian.
We do.
Where do you go, Ian?
Yeah, this is all you, man.
Anchor.fm/TheCUpodcast. You go.
You're the voicemail boy.
I'm the voicemail boy?
You're the voicemail boy.
I kind of resent that, but okay. Here's the first one.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Philbo, a.k.a. Phil Bowser. So from your recent Amico videos, I know you mentioned the Ouya. And Ouya. As an original backer, geez, 8 years ago, just wanted to come out in support of it. I think it got a lot of hate. But looking at the landscape nowadays, I think it was very underrated. You literally could run any Android APK on it to see if it works from your phone. Oh. You could run RetroArch up to PS1 perfectly, and it even had its own custom fork of XBMC.
That's interesting. All that Ouya love out
yeah.
there.
I mean, I imagine it's probably fun to, you know, hack, and yeah, I mean, you can probably do a lot with it because it's an Android box.
Play your Android games on a TV.
Up to a certain point, anyways.
Yeah. There's nothing against it. The thing about the Ouya was like...
No, I mean, I didn't buy an Ouya because I didn't want... Sorry, mobile games, but like there was nothing wrong with the concept. I understood it. I just didn't think there was a huge market for it.
No, because at that point, smartphone prices were starting to come way down
yep.
as well. So that sort of like killed off the need. And I think a lot of people realize that like mobile quality in terms of like aesthetics and complexity, people like playing them on a mobile device.
They fit their device.
There's not like a lot of Breath of the Wilds on my iPhone that I could, I mean, like it doesn't, though there is that cat simulator game that is open world cat game. There is a cat simulator game.
Oh,
look that up. That's a big game.
Hey guys, Dustin from Georgia here.
Georgia.
I was wondering what other video games would make good long form TV shows like The Witcher. What are your thoughts? And Ian,
oh Jesus,
what's the best pasta noodle? Thanks, guys. See ya.
The Wagon Wheel, whatever that was called.
I really like. What is it called? Shit, I know it. It's the spiral, but not the normal spiral. It's the like loopy spiral.
Loopy spiral, not the spring. Okay, I think know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I have to figure out.
Is it like a fatter one? It's like a weirder, sprungier
yes,
one.
Yes, and like I love this pasta. I ask for it by name all the time, and now I can't
ask for it by name.
I can't.
Yeah,
think.
Technically, all these pasta shapes have a name.
Yes.
Like the wagon wheel has a name. I don't know what the hell it is. We always call it the wagon wheel.
The wagon wheel has one that's like spokes or something.
Yeah, like rigatoni's.
So fusilli is the normal spiral. That's not okay. That's cavatappi pasta.
Okay. Well, how about this other question? You know, TV shows, video game TV shows. What do you think could work besides The Witcher?
I don't know. You're on that one, man.
Am I?
Yeah. I'm busy looking at pasta.
They're doing a Halo series on Paramount Plus, I believe. Right.
It's cavatappi.
They're doing that. Look up the fat noodle with the ridges. What the hell that one's always called?
The fat nude with the ridges?
Fat noodle, not fat
nude. I know,
nude.
But like...
With the ridges, yeah.
Is it round?
It's a noodle with the ridges. It's a tube.
A tube.
It's a fat, shorter rigatoni. You know what rigatoni is, right? Yeah. Rigatoni is the standard.
No, Pat, I have no idea what a rigatoni is.
Well, I don't
is.
Know.
Look up that one real quick.
TV shows, I don't know. I'm blanking on because I'll talk about pasta. I'm sorry.
He totally threw us off.
Threw us off about TV shows. How about Double Dragon the series? That'd be Ian's favorite one.
It was gross.
How about River City Ransom the series?
That would
make more sense, right?
Yep.
The gals and girls.
Especially because they're bringing everything in. There's all sorts of
stuff. There's all high school rivalries and stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like that. Next one.
Hey, guys. Lelanders here from Canada. I try to have Pats and the CU Podcast patron. I give them both a big thumbs up. CU Podcast patron takes the top as my favorite, though. Ian's writing is really good. Do you think we will see lawsuits coming from sour Amico investors? And could this end up being the ultimate failed console documentary?
The check's in the mail for pushing the Patreon.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that.
Will there be lawsuits? There's definitely going to be a documentary, I think, at some point. There will be lawsuits if the investors, I guess, could claim some fraudulent things that happened or statements, or the government can go after them if they deem that there was enough fraudulent things and it's on their radar. Absolutely.
It's all starting to sound a little conspiracy. I don't think any of them see any repercussions.
Well, they definitely said fraudulent things.
Sure.
For sure. We talked about that.
I don't think any.
But it's whether the government thinks it's worth their time to go after.
Sure.
That's the thing. You still got that noodle?
Yeah, I can't find it, so I'm giving up.
When they make a documentary about the Intellivision Amico, who is going to play Tommy Tallarico?
Well, if he was 25 years younger, Joe Pesci. Same stature, same sort of attitude, Italian-American. Hey! I read about Joe Pesci. Very fascinating character. He wanted to really be a musician.
Yeah.
He was part of the Jersey Boys crew way back in the 60s, and he was like always like part of the band of Frankie Valli and all those guys. I did not know that. Or he could have been a mobster. They could have went one or the other. Oh, good thing he turned into a good, great actor.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Pat. Hey, this is Josh again. Pat, I was thinking about visiting San Diego during the summertime, and I was just wondering, if I paid you a pretty good sum of money, would you be my personal tour guide and maybe wine and dine me and show me everything there is to see in San Diego? Thanks, guys.
Sounds like the next line of that was going to be like the soles of your feet.
Josh, I don't know if there's enough money in your bank account.
I'm saying for Pat.
Thank you, Ian, for having my back there.
You're welcome.
Well, once you get to wine and dine, I'm no longer a tour guide. I'm an escort.
That sounds like a person who wants feet pics.
Yeah, which has been happening lately. Which I haven't brought that up next year.
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Ian. This is Will out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. This question is primarily for Pat. Pat!
Too much energy.
You're on a hot date.
Was it Josh?
Mention to your lady friend that you've got a large gaming collection back at your place. She says she's not much of a gamer, but she would love to go back and play some games with you. You get one shot to win her heart. What game do you choose to play together?
Work on the timing.
I was going to say, there's a lot of pauses, and he kind of sounded like Mark Bussler from Classic Game Room, if you kind of twisted your ear a little bit. Like, oh, interesting.
It's a fine voice, but yeah, work on the timing.
Like, one game to impress. This happened at the Guard Apartments in Jersey, because I had my games out front. They weren't sequestered like they are now at Castle Country. And it used to be like, well, I played the Wii a couple times, or let's play Duck.
Cocaine Jimmy's 16-bit blowbang.
The one game that the ladies would always talk about is, I remember Duck Hunt or Mario or things like that. Those are the ones that then I say, well, technically you can't play Duck Hunt on the good old Olivia LCD.
And then they fall asleep.
Yeah, I try to explain why.
The science.
And then, yeah.
Let me pull out this document that explains it.
We'll pull up the Clan of the Grey Wolf video that explains why it doesn't work. That's also an article in a certain NES guidebook.
It sure is.
It sure is. You're so tired of the book.
Sure is.
Hey, this is Gage from New Mexico. Quick question for Ian. Did you ever find yourself trying to persuade parents from buying certain kid-oriented games just based off quality? Lately, I've been buying my niece some Switch cards, and I usually sit down with her to look at the games on the eShop channel. And it seems like most of the games are oriented toward kids, just are just pure, absolute garbage, just worthless pieces of, information.
Worthless piece of information. Are you trying to dissuade parents?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, as time went on, I stopped. Parents don't necessarily want to be told that. They just want to buy the thing that their kid wants, and they want to leave. They might know that it's going to be shitty. They just, like, they're like, okay, my kid right now is being a pain in the ass, and this has Spangbab on it, so...
Spangbab?
Spangbab.
Spangbab!
Spangbab SquarePants, and I'm going to buy it. But parents who would ask, and there were parents who would ask, I would always be like, you definitely want to... My rule of thumb for a long time was always, if it's licensed, you don't want it, generally. The games that really changed that, though, for me were the Lego games. I'm glad the Lego games exist, because even though, if you're an adult, they're fun. They're fun games, especially to play with someone else. But if you've played, one, you've kind of played them all after at a certain point, especially if you've played a level-based one and an open-world one, whatever. However, it's a great library of games to, be able to direct a parent to and be like, you can buy pretty much anything here, and it's going to be good. So if they like Marvel or Jurassic Park or...
Batman,
The Hobbit, or Batman, or any of that, just Star Wars, just buy it. And your kids will like it.
Hi, Pat and Ian, longtime fan. I love you guys so much. I'm going to let you in on a ground floor of your remarkable investment opportunity.
Oh shit!
A sealed, never opened Amico warehouse. This thing is mint. In fact, the eviction notice on the door is so fresh you can rub some ink off on your fingers. Even collecting sealed games is so passe. The future is collecting sealed buildings. Also, just because I love you guys so much, buyers of the sealed Amico warehouse will also get what I call a NFT, or not fucking Tommy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sealed buildings, huh?
Excuse me, what is it?
A sealed building.
Boarded up. That actually, no, because that's Nick's warehouse, supposedly. That's right.
Yeah.
Or Nick owned that. That was the CFO, which
that's what I heard.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Jackson from Baltimore. I've been recording my podcast, Two Consoles Too Late, on Anchor for a year now.
That's actually funny.
I broadcast weekly, and I keep my subjects to movies and retro gaming. And I was wondering if you had any advice for early podcasters to expand their following. I love the show. Have a good one.
It's a tough one. It's kind of hard. A podcast, more than anything else, has to be organically spread. There's no algorithm. There's no consolidated podcast platform that recommends things to everyone like YouTube does. You can't like search for a topic and something comes up. You can search for like genres and things, but not specific topics, I think. So like, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all I can really say, and I don't mean this to be discouraging, but is just keep at it, and you know, hopefully you get some listeners that have audiences that they can recommend it to. There's no guarantee that if Pat and I would have started this podcast 3 years ago instead of nearly 9 years ago that it would have ever taken off, because things like retro gaming and movies are popular podcast topics.
Yeah, and we had the advantage. I had about 80,000 YouTube subscribers to market the podcast to when we first started. If I didn't have that, it was just nothing. Well,
it's definitely a combination of that and the fact that it was just earlier.
It was earlier on,
and there weren't a lot of video game and
they were all related podcasts. They were all at the time. I remember us saying, like, in terms of independent podcasts that were gaming, there was only a few. Mm-hmm. They were all like GameSpot, IGN, whatever other ones, not defunct, that was around almost 10 years ago. There was a lot of them that were corporate ones. And we used to hit the top 10. We were the only like non-corporate one, probably us and like Retronauts, I guess, that were like hitting up there. Now there's a billion podcasts, you know?
I would just say that if it's, you know, it's, you're not looking to make it your main source of income, and I don't think anyone should. Fun. Just do it for fun. As long as you're having fun, enjoy yourself. I mean, it's a good time.
I mean, if you happen to get a you know, someone like a dice seller as a sponsor eventually, that's great.
Yeah.
Pretty in Dice. I'll do a couple more here.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Pete from Staten Island, D. Machetto on Twitter.
Staten Island!
Let's assume for a moment that the Intellivision Amico actually comes out one day and actually ends up in stores like Walmart.
Mm.
When these things inevitably go on bargain basement prices before they head to the dumpster, how much would you be willing to pay for one? $5? $10? $20? That's a pretty cheap investment for a display piece for your living room.
Get a shot in me and I'd probably do it for 50, Max.
50, you need a shot?
Yeah. I mean,
drop some acid.
In all honesty, if and at this point, this topic is changing so much, just like on a week to week basis. 2 months ago, I might have told you maybe they'd ship something out eventually. Now we're never going to see anything. But if it were to ship with like 6 half finished games, 2 controllers, and a fancy box. Sure, for a display piece.
Just to laugh at it?
After it's in clearance, and I'm no longer giving them really any money.
I see it would be the new convention toy that we all play with when we were drinking one night with me, you, Norm,
yes,
Dan,
we all just
Andre.
Hook it up and get a... Yeah.
We try to play their bastardized version of Cornhole with those terrible controllers that'll probably break down after a month.
It becomes
and a half.
The Cornhole machine.
The Cornhole machine, which don't Google that probably.
No, probably don't do that.
You don't want to Google the Cornhole machine.
Yeah, don't do that.
Do a couple more?
Sure.
You want to check in with someone?
Yeah, let's check in with someone.
Okay. Well, we got actually 2 people to check in with first.
All right.
Here's the first.
Hey guys, it's Andrew from Ukraine. Thank you for your words of support. My heart is very full. Me and my family are safe. We live in western part of country. I am mostly involved in humanitarian activities, supporting army and refugees. This is very surreal, like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, when a bad guy invades peaceful country just for sake of invading. I am sure that soon war will end, and I will fly to US and will meet you guys on Expo, and Pat will sign certain NES guidebook for me, and Ian will sign best NES game ever made, Silent Service. Again, thank you for your support. And to all who listen, don't take your freedom for granted. Generation have been fighting for it. as my country does now. Bye, guys.
Hear, hear, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Give him heck there.
That was great.
Well, you're
thank you for checking in.
Just to put a sort of, you know, capstone on that, because that's really the only kind of, I don't really know anyone in the Ukraine besides good old Andrew has voicemailed us about 5-6 times in the past. And it's just like when you're so separated by, you know, whatever, 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 miles, it kind of doesn't put in perspective. But this is a person now in this country helping out the country's fighting for survival.
Yeah.
Russia's plans were leaked. They wanted to take over the entire country. It wasn't this bullshit cleaning out neo-Nazis or some bullshit. They wanted to take over the entire country. That was their goal, or is their goal still. That's what they plan to do. That's it. So good on you, Andrew. I hope that this gets resolved more sooner than later. Russia's pretty much backed into its own corner. They've been isolated. So at some point, hopefully someone on their side steps in and fucking says to Putin, this is fucking enough. This is ruining our country, our economy, and we look like assholes to everyone else. More so, like, but you hope that happens. You hope that happens and it doesn't escalate anymore. That. All right, one more person to check in on here.
Hi, Pat. How are you? You know, Tom's not talking to anyone right now, so I'm calling instead. This is a friend of his who's been working at Nintendo for some time. I believe he's mentioned me. But, you know, my English is not very good, so I found someone to dub my voice for this call. I hope you don't mind. You know, I've been watching everything that's been going on between you guys, and oh my, you're both obviously very angry, hurtful, vituperative. And, you know, of course, I like Tom, and I like you. I like your friend there. I believe Tom calls him the long-haired dude. But, you know, I think the only way to move past it all is one of you needs to be the big guy. And I don't know how tall you are, but I don't think that's Tom. Oh, I am bad. Yes, sometimes I can be a real rascal. Anyway, live long and prosper.
Okay, so it seems like Shiggy got George Takei to do the dub. Is that
what it was? Yeah,
that's the
all right.
Like that's the conceit on that one.
So Shigzy's checking in.
Shigzy.
Miyamoto-san.
That fucking story. There's so many ridiculous things about this whole story. But the whole, the outrageous claims such as, like, I'm friends with Miyamoto-san, that would probably make the top 10 most ridiculous things about this. Just the claims like that.
Phrases like, whenever I'm around Miyamoto-san, I'm always asking.
Yeah, we're doing shots every Friday.
Stuff that sounds like it maybe makes sense, like when you say it, but when you really think about it, it's just like so whenever you get around this person, you just ask him about Mario and video. Like that's not how friendships and stuff work.
He's not friends with them. That's right. The point. He's not friends with them.
I know, but it's whatever.
that's like saying whenever I'm around Tom Hanks and we talk about acting and you know, it's like no, I don't know the person. I mean, if I met him once, I can't call him my friend. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it.
That's it for the podcast.
We're good.
This is a shorter podcast, but there wasn't a huge amount going on. It was fun.
We're peppy.
Ian Honey Shamed me on Twitter.
Full of life.
Go ratio that tweet for me, please, and support me.
Full of life. Do you know what ratio means?
Yeah, it means to leave more comments than likes. It means that people disagree and think you're an asshole. At this point, they don't think you're an asshole about honey shaming me. Do I know what ratio means? Yeah. Do I know what it means, Ian? You gonna ratio shame me? Pat doesn't know what ratio means.
I think it's a worthwhile thing to put out there, whether or not you
All right, Ian, use the microphone. You're a professional.
Honey on chicken.
Okay, we'll see you later.